second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And
who's our sponsor, Bill?
Well, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery.
Did I throw you there for a second?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, Pape Machinery is our local John Deere dealer. They handle all ag and turf products for John Deere. And if you are looking for a mower, from a mower to a tractor to implements, they've got it. They're also a Honda dealer, so if you want to pick up a generator, you are in California now, so you're gonna need a generator eventually. Go down and see them. They've got all shapes and sizes. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just off take the Oasis Road exit and head north, and you'll run right into them. And their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com. Yeah, go see them. Great shop, too. They can work on anything.
There you have it.
There it is.
So let's see. You can find everything about the program, and we're always happy for all the fun individual sponsors that we have. We really appreciate you guys. You can find it all at wethepeopleradio.us. You also have our contact information if you have ideas for programs, or like one time, like my sound was all screwed up, and you know, someone shot me an email about that. So we appreciate that. And just a little web note as far as people who listen online to the program during the week when the archives are, well, the archives are always free and they are commercial free during the week there. So a lot of people tune in at that point in time. But the Ukrainians are still pulling a hard number two. Anything out of the U.S., top of the list is Ukraine for listenership. So I'm sure we'll be roped into the impeachment here anytime soon.
We'll be called as witnesses. What have we done there to develop a
Ukrainian
relationship?
Keep them guessing.
Yeah.
We appreciate you pitching in. So anyway, back to our guest, Dr. Peter Pry.
Yeah, we were talking about Virginia's new gun laws that they're trying to pass and how they're going to determine which guns you're going to get to keep and which ones you're going to have to give up. So let's pick it back up there, Dr. Pry.
Yeah, and the larger message here, the larger lesson we have to learn from Virginia is I think it is the left's plan to use Virginia as an experiment, starting with imposing on the Second Amendment rights to see how much they can get away with, and if this works in Virginia, that they can use it as a model for the rest of the country the next time they capture the White House and the Congress, which they hope will be in the next elections. And the way they're doing it is also, I think, very insidious. You know, because the left, I think, learned from their experience recently, but also even going back to the 60s, that America doesn't want a revolution. America especially doesn't want a left-wing revolution, and it rejects the values of the left. They weren't able to sell that to the country back in the 60s. And whenever they've run a presidential candidate on it, except for Obama, who didn't really run on that left-wing platform, actually Obama ran on a post-racial platform, that if we elected him, it would put the racial divisions behind us and would be and that a vote for him would be a vote for unifying the country and moving past the divisions of the past. And that turned out not to be true, of course. You know, Obama did everything he could to stir up racial and class and gender differences.
He did a really good job, too.
The meat and potatoes of the Democrat Party. But I think the insidious plan in Virginia is to pass Second Amendment laws that will be so draconian that they will spark resistance. They will provoke resistance, maybe even armed resistance, from the citizens of Virginia. One of the scary things that's happened here, actually from the point of view of a Second Amendment supporter like myself, a positive thing, is that 85% of the counties in Virginia, their sheriffs notified the governor. They went on record as saying that they will not enforce laws passed by the Democrat State House and signed into law by Governor Northam, they will not enforce laws that impinge on people's Second Amendment rights and that violate the Constitution. And not only that, but they will deputize the gun owners in their counties. They will deputize them to oppose the imposition of such laws. Now, after that, the Democrats in the Capitol escalated the situation. This is where the suggestion was raised by the Democrats about mobilizing the Virginia National Guard to enforce Governor Northrup's confiscatory gun laws. And the disturbing thing that just happened over this weekend, as we had mentioned earlier in the show, is that the Virginia National Guard, I was hoping that they too would join with the sheriffs and reject enforcement. They would not be used to enforce unconstitutional laws. But they didn't say that. They've decided to take a neutral position, which is kind of disturbing. And they have counseled any member of the Virginia National Guard not to comment to the press on what their views are on this matter. So you've got the battle lines being drawn up here in Virginia for possibly a transition from a cold civil war that's been going on to a hot civil war. And the way the left would like that hot civil war to unfold is by putting conservatives and people who support the Second Amendment in the light of aggressors, because we're pushing back and we're not obeying the law, and they need to put us down and smash us down by mobilizing the military against us. And that's the paradigm, I think, that we could see for the future of this country if these kinds of people gain control of the White House and the Congress. You know, and the formula would be applied after the Second Amendment, after taking away the Second Amendment, in effect, to start working on other things, you know, like religious freedom and religious conscience, you know, shutting up down Catholic schools, for example, that might teach that gay marriage is unethical and is not acceptable.
Well, and they're dying to get rid of the Electoral College so they can have their cities vote for all of our presidents.
Right. That, you know, that public policy based on the idea that there are two biological sexes is somehow homophobic and evil, and we need to be thinking of public policy in terms of 26 genders. The whole left-wing agenda on sexual politics, on green politics, environmentalism and all the rest, and controlling our lives, you know, if they can make this work for taking away people's Second Amendment rights, then look for all of the Bill of Rights to be under assault by the left until they can remake America in their image.
Well, if they want to take a look at what it's going to look like, come to California, because they've implemented a lot of those laws. The whole assault weapons, the 10-round magazines. If you want to buy ammunition, you have to
have to
pass a test and get a permit and pay $25 a year.
Wait, before you leave that one, not only do you have to have a permit, basically, to buy ammunition, but because they gave driver's licenses to illegal aliens in California, the driver's license is no longer a form of ID. So now people have to go through all the hoops of getting a real ID before they can get past the test to get the ammunition.
Right. Or fly on an airplane or a lot of things.
So in honor of the insanity that is that, let's take a quick break and play a little song, because the Eagles wrote a little song about it, and it's kind of true today and coming to a town near you in Virginia.
Welcome to the Hotel California. Said, we are all just prisoners here of our own device. And in the master's chambers, they gathered for the feast. They stab it with their stealing eyes, but they just can't kill the beast. Last thing I remember, I was
love you, boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
There we go. The New Virginia theme song.
So, Dr. Pry, what's the time frame on this? These passing these laws in Virginia?
I think you'll see it in the spring. You know, they're playing the verbal chess games now, but the state legislature convenes in the spring, and that's when we will see this begin to happen, see this begin to unfold. You know, you had mentioned, you want to see the future of the country, you know, look to California. And I have to say, I agree with that. Except I think it'll be far worse once they get hold of the whole country, if they capture White House, capture the Congress. But I had a speaking engagement last year in Los Angeles and hadn't been to L.A. since I had been a student at USC in 1984. 1984 was my last recollection of Los Angeles. And I just didn't recognize the city. I was, my host who had me out there was obviously a wealthy businessman. He lived in a mansion on a little mountain overlooking, probably in the San Bernardino Mountains or something, overlooking Los Angeles. And when he drove me across the city, you know, to go to where I was supposed to speak, it looked like a third world country. Mm-hmm. The streets were just filled with homeless people.
Yes.
The city was basically transformed into a tent city with people literally living in tents all over the sidewalks. Streets basically not drivable anymore because people were just, you know, wandering down the streets in some of them, and many of them in wheelchairs, and obviously people very poor, very sick, and probably very drug addicted. And we managed to get through all that and then went up the other side to another high point where I met with other wealthy businessmen to basically give them my, you know, give them my presentation. And the difference between 1984, Los Angeles in 1984, and Los Angeles in 2018, which is when I was there, is just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. You know, the city has basically, that I knew, has ceased to exist and been replaced with this dystopian nightmare. And I suspect that's, you know, in addition to people losing their freedoms and civil rights, they can look forward to a not prosperous, hellish kind of a future. And I listening to you guys, I really enjoy your radio show. I enjoy you both as people, talking to you. But how can you stand it? How can you live in California?
We live in land far,
are you
far
in
away.
A little isolated Shangri-La type valley,
kind of
that is safe from the predations of the left wing monsters. Or
well, we're like 10.5 hours north of L.A.
Yeah, we don't.
So we're just below the Oregon border.
Yeah, we have our homeless issues. Don't get me wrong. We do have some of that. We don't have people camping on the sidewalks. And
well, we kind of do.
Well, yeah, but
not anything like
LA. No, yeah. But it's coming. We see it every year. It gets a little bit worse and a little bit worse. We don't really have any representation up here.
Well, our congressional district, just to give you a frame of reference, our congressional district here covers 11 counties, 11 of the 58 counties in California.
Yeah, and
so that's how
land mass wise is about the size of half the East Coast.
Yeah, and our really big town is the one we live in. It has 90,000 people.
Yeah. So it's a world of difference from L.A. or even San Francisco, which is, again, another city that's, I think, lost. You know, when these cities get down to that level, I don't know how you turn that around. I mean, the police, imagine going into an area like that and trying to investigate crimes or even just police it when you have people that are basically out of the system. They don't live on the grid, so to speak. And there's so many of them. I'm not sure how you come back from that.
Yeah, I agree. The situation is almost literally the Dark Ages.
Mm-hmm.
The kinds of diseases that had once been vanquished in this country are coming back in places like Los Angeles and San Francisco. I understand San Francisco lost a high-tech fair that was actually started in San Francisco by the Silicon Valley, but they're not even going to be meeting in the state anymore. They're meeting someplace else because of the danger to people who want to participate in this fair from just walking the streets of San Francisco, try to go from hotels to go to where the convention would be because of things like, you know, needles on the sidewalks and just all the garbage and the human feces and the risk of possibly catching some kind of disease out of the Middle Ages that that used to be vanquished in this country. It's really, really disturbing. And you guys should call yourselves Radio Free California, maybe. I mean, it's really sort of like, you know, like you're living in some little isolated paradise.
We kind of are. I mean, I think we're the second. I think our county is first or second per capita in concealed weapons permits in the state of California.
Yeah, I think we're second most.
It's like, I don't know, 5,000-7,000 people, something. It's a big number. So people here actually care about their rights and have not willingly thrown them over, as they have in some of the
other
parts of the state.
But both our houses are democratically controlled, the Senate and the Assembly.
Yeah, California. What term limits look like?
You
get to be totally controlled by the agencies.
Yeah, there's something wrong with our system. People are always talking about reforming our system in a leftward direction. But maybe we need to be thinking about reforming it in a conservative direction, because it doesn't seem fair when you've got such a huge geographical part of your state, even though it's sparsely inhabited, but you basically have no representation.
No.
You have no political voice. I used to live in southern Maryland, and it was a similar situation. Where Southern Maryland is very conservative, they're very Catholic, they're very much about gun rights. The people who live there are mostly hunters and fishermen, many of them related to the original settlers going back to the 1630s when Maryland was originally a Catholic colony that had been established. But these people have no representation. They have no representation in the State House. They have no representation in the Congress. The Democrats are so totally in control because of the way they've gerrymandered, you know, that state. How come the Democrats always get away with gerrymandering, but when the Republicans try to do it, it never seems to work? And the press is all about, oh, those evil Republicans. The Democrats gerrymander all the time and do it apparently successfully.
We do kind of suck at that kind of stuff.
You know, a lot of their political power is based on that.
Right. Well, you look at you just look at some of the players that are coming out of our state here, and that tells you how out of touch people are.
Yes,
you know, Nancy Pelosi, Maxine Waters, Adam Schiff.
Right,
and they're, you know, people get mad about it. They act like Congress elects itself. I'm like, you have to remember, there were a lot of voters.
This is what happens when
the electorate is the cause of this.
They're elected by the big cities, you know, the places that don't want guns and, you know, think guns are dangerous. That's who's electing these people, and that's got to change.
But
you know, one of the ironies of we had been talking about how important the Second Amendment was as a constitutional right, but you know, as a practical right to stave off tyranny and to defend the interests of the little guy and the working man and of minorities, there's a history there where gun ownership has had a practical effect on our politics. It's not taught in the history classes. It's not a politically correct thing to talk about anything about American history, and particularly nothing that would support gun rights. But almost from the very beginning, after the American Republic was founded, there was Shays Rebellion, for example, which was among the revolutionary soldiers who were disappointed that the promised pay that they were wasn't forthcoming from Congress. And so there was an armed revolt among a lot of those veterans of the American Revolution. Now, it was put down, but the Congress ended up coughing up the money for those veterans after getting a scare from them because of that uprising. There was the Whiskey Rebellion. You know, George Washington put that down. But it did soften, and slowed the encroachment of the federal government into people who wanted to engage in distilling and doing that as a business and without interference from the revenuers from Washington. You know, after the we of course had the American Civil War, which everybody might take that as an example of why you shouldn't have gun ownership. But let's face it, had we not had an armed citizenry on both sides, the fundamental issues that were resolved in that war, for good or ill, whether it came, minority rights, racial, rights, the end of slavery, as well as the continued existence of the United States, was resolved once and for all in a way that might never have been resolved.
Oh, absolutely.
And the aftermath of the American Civil War, the Jim Crow period, if it had not been for the fact that the black farmers were armed and had guns in the South, the Ku Klux Klan might have wiped them out altogether. There was actually a conspiracy, not just by the Klan, but by the Southern governments in the aftermath of Reconstruction, who rejected Reconstruction and rejected, after the Radical Republican effort at Reconstruction, was kicked out of the South in 1876 by a political deal. It was, the state governments actually became instruments of oppression against black people who wanted to vote, who wanted to have education, who wanted to enjoy the normal civil liberties. And the only thing that kept them from being wiped out was the fact that they owned guns. The Virginia, the labor unions, the armed labor unions fought against the Pinkertons and eventually earned the right to that violence. Was a contributing factor. It wasn't just the goodness of the hearts of the elites, but the fact that people were willing to fight for their labor union rights and won the right for organized labor. The U.S. Army was actually called out before World War I in the early 1900s to put down coal miner strikes in West Virginia, because they were so angry about the dangerous working conditions that were being imposed upon them. And conditions where they weren't allowed to unionize, that they armed themselves and fought back against the army. Now, they lost, but again, the fact that people were willing to defend their rights and that were armed and capable of doing it, scared the powers that be enough so that those rights actually were forthcoming, and we ended up having better working conditions for the miners and safety conditions, even up into our own day. If you look at the Black Panthers. I mean, in addition to the peaceful civil rights movement that was led by Reverend Martin Luther King, there were violent civil rights activists, including the Black Panthers, who were an armed force and wanted a separate Black America and wanted to secede from the United States, but obviously that was never realistic. That wasn't a benign thing. It wasn't a good thing. But it was a good thing that they were able to show that force of arms which was a contributing factor to the civil rights legislation that was passed to try to quell the civil war that was brewing in this country in the 60s. And I find it really ironic that when you look at most of these courses where gun ownership, the Second Amendment, has resulted in reforms and progress that have helped labor and minorities, and there are causes that had been favored historically by the left, causes that in American universities you can get a degree in labor history, for example, and study, you know, the armed rebellions of organized labor.
But they forgot
the
how they got
they
there
because these guys had guns, you know.
Right, exactly.
But
we have to take
don't
a really
make the connection that in the left or in our universities about how the Second Amendment isn't just sensible because of a theoretical threat from tyranny, but it has actually had a positive, real effect in our history in moving the country in directions that have made life better for everybody. You know, because you can't trust state, you can't trust government, especially in cahoots with big business, to always do the right thing.
Well,
the little guy is always going to get shafted.
For the folks
the Second Amendment has been a safeguard against that.
Yes, and for the people who want to see that in present day, I mean, you look at where most of these shootings happen, they're in gun-free zones. So there's a reason for that. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Peter Pry. You are listening to We the People.
Well, I know what's right. I got just one life. Pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground, and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground, and I won't back down.
Langley recently with a plain and simple dream. Wanna infiltrate some third world place and topple their regime. Those men in black with their mansion suitcases, where everything's on a need-to-know basis. Agents got that swagger, everyone's so cloak and dagger. I'm feeling nervous, but I'm really kinda wishing for an undercover mission. That's when the red alert came on the radio, and I put my earpiece on. Got my dark sunglasses on, and I had my weapon drawn. So I get my handcuffs, my cyanide pills, my classified dossier. Cutting the phones like, yeah. Shredding the files like, yeah. And then memorized all the enemy spies. I gotta neutralize today. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA.
Couldn't resist. we had to play the CIA song.
So, Aaron Ryan, are we going to stand our ground? Are we going to knock back down?
Exactly.
I really love these songs you've been playing that are so appropriate to our theme today.
Well, we've literally been training for this for a lot of years. You think about the music that a lot of us grew up with, and that's... It's just funny to look at it in the context of what's going on politically now. It's like, wow, they were ahead of, you know, we were ahead of ourselves in some ways. I don't see people knuckling under for that. I mean, I, at least in this area, people are becoming pretty strident about their gun rights. Actually, they filed a lawsuit. A guy who lives just in the county north of us has filed a suit for open carry that's still going.
Well, hallelujah, and good for them.
Yeah, he found it.
Far from knuckling down. People are ready for open revolt here in Virginia over it. In fact, I can't remember if I did mention it, if I failed to mention it, it's a terrible oversight, but 85% of the counties here in Virginia have now passed, in anticipation of these gun confiscation laws, they have now passed what they call Second Amendment sanctuary counties.
Oh, so yeah, you said that in your
county
email.
I live in, Spotsylvania County. Second Amendment, they have made themselves Second Amendment sanctuaries. You know, so a place where to put the state government on notice and the governor on notice that if they pass laws that are considered are crossing the line and look like there are going to be draconian restrictions on people's Second Amendment rights, they're not going to be obeyed. They're not going to be enforced. We're Second Amendment sanctuaries now. So people are not backing off. They're not going to back down. They're going to stand their ground. And I'll tell you, I personally am going to stand my ground here. You know, if they want me to register my so-called assault rifle, I'm going to tell the governor he can go pound salt. You know, I'm not going to participate in my own eventual disarmament.
Well, the problem with California was, is again, without representation, those laws were passed as far as the assault weapons went. And now, if you own one of those guns, you have to register it as an assault weapon and get a permit for it, which everybody knows the next step is then we're going to recall them and we know you have it, so it'll go away. Or you have to disassemble it, and you can keep it stored in a disassembled position. You can then keep it and not register it. If you want to transport it, you have to lock it in a box.
Transport's a big deal.
And so it's just almost impossible. And then, of course, you have to get a license to buy the ammunition for it. So this is all stuff that I think, once it comes to California and it gets passed, other states like Virginia are going to go, hey, we can do that and maybe even do one better and take another big step to basically banning the ownership of firearms. It's inevitable.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And the thing that is one of the things that makes me so angry about all this is that I think that they ultimately, I don't even think they want people to comply with the law. Not here in Virginia. They're being so pushy, confrontational about it. I think they are hoping that people will defy the law and that there will be a confrontation, maybe even violence, so that they can now use Virginia as a test bed for
right.
using the Virginia National Guard, you know, the bringing the military power to bear on the conservative people, on the common people, and putting us down forcibly.
And I don't
shove this down our throats.
Yeah, and I don't. I would like to believe that our National Guard or our military would not raise arms against the citizens. You know, I know they swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, but they're violating the Constitution by taking weapons away from the citizens. So I don't know. It's the last thing I'd want to see happen, but you know, they're going to push it too far, and once we start down that road, it's going to get real ugly, and people are going to die.
I agree. That's why I think that we might see the transition in Virginia from a cold civil war to a hot civil war.
Mm-hmm.
And sooner than people think, you know, even before President Trump's out of office, because the Virginia State Legislature, I think this is going to be the first thing they're going to do, and they're going to push it as hard as they and far as they can come spring.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Funny,
to see
the last Civil War started, was basically largely waged in Virginia, you know, and here maybe this will be the second American Civil War, and for the future of the country, and it looks like Virginia once again is going to be the battleground state.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something?
Interesting how. I suppose with your field of study, and we use the expression all the time, but history does repeat itself. And hearkening back to our original idea that civilization has come to a close before, and we had to wander in the desert for a very long time, it's not an impossibility. We could walk ourselves into that in a number of ways. This is not the least of which. How about let's take a really quick break, just a couple of seconds early, and then come right back and finish up top of the hour with our guest, Dr. Peter Pry. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Some, and some gave all, and some stood through for the red, white, and blue, and some had to fall. And if you ever think of me, think of all your liberties and recall.
You know, I think about those people when we're busy playing fast and loose with all of our, all the liberties that these people fought for. We had, I just was able to meet a lady last month who turned 100 years old. She was a nurse at the Battle of the Bulge and went down the ropes on the side of the ship in her pumps and her stockings and her skirt and got in the landing craft and got through the 5 feet of water. And you know, you look at what has happened. There's a guy here in Reading, actually. He's a Pearl Harbor survivor. He turns 100 this month, and he was in Normandy also at the Battle of the Bulge. So there are these people who have seen the history of our country and world history, and they're watching these kinds of things go on. I mean, I'm frustrated. We're all frustrated, but I can only imagine how. I mean, you'd be beside yourself.
Yeah, we've been talking, we were talking in the first hour about the collapse of civilization in the past and the advent of dark ages in the past because barbarians figured out how to knock the technological props out from under the critical infrastructures that supported those civilizations. And one of the things that has, you know, one of the greatest revolutions in the history of civilization, I think, was the birth of the United States based on a Constitution and Bill of Rights. It's not a technological piece of infrastructure that holds our society up. I mean, there are those things, but what makes us special and unique in history, the freedoms that we enjoy, are based on that intellectual infrastructure that's embodied in the Constitution and Bill of Rights. And when I look at people like Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff, you know, the barbarians are in our gates.
Mm-hmm.
These people have no conception of our own history.
No.
They have no understanding of the Constitution. I mean, it makes my skin crawl to hear them talking about, oh, we're a nation of laws, not men, as they proceed to shred the Constitution with their crazy... they're as bad as the Nazis and communists at a show trial trying to fob off their reasons for impeaching the president with this nonsense.
Well, they actually just put a modern twist on it when they did their little focus group and came up with bribery and all that. That never had anything to do with the articles of impeachment, but they thought it would sound better during the hearings.
Right. Like, their barbarians are in our gates, and they're shredding the Constitution on television in front of our own eyes, and there might be no coming back from it, you know, because constitutional republics are so fragile. They depend upon an educated citizenry and an educated leadership, which we don't have. You know, at least half of the political leadership in this country, represented by the Democrat Party, doesn't believe in the Constitution. Not really. They just pay lip service to it. You know, they believe in power, and that's all they understand. Their personal power and the power of their party. They're so partisan. And they regard the other half of their citizens. I mean, that's one of the other magical and unique things about constitutional republics is that when people are like-minded in their values, you know, about the rule of law, about agreement on the Constitution, agreement in the Bill of Rights, when you have that, really and truly, the sides aren't supposed to be able to see themselves, they can't see each other as enemies, because they have so much in common, more in common than they have, but that's obviously not the case in our country. You know, we're obviously locked in a cold civil war that might be on the verge of going hot, because there's an enormous schism in our values between an America that still believes in constitutionalism and does believe in the rule of law, and America and the other half of America that doesn't, and is just engaged in a naked power grab so they control all of us, and that we're perceived as the enemy by these people. These people truly do see us as an enemy to what they regard as the inevitable progress of history. People clinging to our guns and Bibles and don't have a scientific approach. And it's disgusting how ignorant and stupid the people are that are shredding our Constitution. I mean, contrast someone who is a true constitutional scholar, like a Mark Levin, for example, or an Alan Dershowitz, who's a man of the left, even, you know, with Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff. Truly, they are, you know, truly barbarians who do not understand what the American project is about, and they don't care. And they're in the process of destroying it. They're going to be in the process of destroying it all in front of us next week on television when they go forward with this phony impeachment. And it could be trigger. I mean, it is going to be knocking the intellectual props out from under our civilization, this magical American civilization that has to this point been the most successful and most prosperous and most importantly the most free society and the most tolerant society ever to exist in history. And that could all start to go away next week. And let's not forget, it's not just a question of us doing it to ourselves. Do you think Russia and China and North Korea and Iran are not watching? They are watching.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
You know, they are watching, and their general staffs are making calculations. This coming year is going to be one of the most dangerous in American history. I wonder what Kim Jong-un's promised Christmas present is for America. You know, they're getting so bold, you know, because they think this president has been weakened. And he, frankly, has been weakened by the impeachment and divisions. You know, these guys are probably thinking to themselves, you know, could I grab South Korea and would America be so preoccupied with itself? Or could I attack America itself at this juncture and, you know, do it in an anonymous way? Or people who could doubt that most of the mainstream media wouldn't blame President Trump if this country was attacked, and President Trump would end up coming out as the bad guy and the enemy, and that we wouldn't be pulling together, unified, to defend ourselves against any of these foreign adversaries that want to do us in and end the American experiment. Because freedom is always a threat to tyranny. They're so happy to see us destroying our own freedoms. But I'm not sure that they're going to just rely upon us to end American civilization all on their own. They'll be happy to help.
Right. No, and we are, I mean, when you look at what's going on in D.C. right now, we're pretty vulnerable to outside influence. And, I mean, we need to really kind of step away and take a look at what's going on. With the attacks on the president, because this isn't going to be just a liberal versus conservative thing because Trump's in office. It's going to happen with every president from now on.
Yeah, they've started.
Yeah, this
really
ball is
bad precedent. Yeah. You don't like him? Oh, okay. Well,
we're going to impeach him.
We're just going to find
how it can go this far when basically they're. Is such flimsy evidence.
If we're fortunate enough to have future presidents,
well, that's true.
Which, you know, we have to survive through the next year. And then another thing that has to happen is that the Trump administration has to successfully prosecute this coup d'etat, which is what it is. I'm really disturbed that nobody's gone to jail yet.
Oh, you and a lot of people.
Are going to jail, and it may be that none of them ever will go to jail. If that happens, it'll be sending a signal to the deep state that they can get away with this.
Yep.
And so we might call a future president a president, but if they're elected through a coup d'etat, through illegal means, you know, they're not really a president anymore.
No.
They've become a tyrant, you know, a part of our civilization that isn't described in the Constitution, but that the founders feared most, you know, which was our own national security apparatus, you know, that has become an entity unto itself, a power unto itself, and decides to make itself a kingmaker.
Right.
And that's what happened to the Romans. That's what destroyed the Roman Republic, you know, the Praetorian Guard and the bureaucracy, you know, becoming so powerful that the Senate didn't matter anymore. And force is what ruled the day, not law.
Well, and when you say it sends a message to the deep state, you know what? It also sends a message to the people of this country that there's two sets of laws now. You know, the ones that we have to live by and the laws that they
the
have
people.
To live by.
We, the
yeah.
little people.
And that is
that's
really dangerous because, I mean, that's what's going to fire off a civil war was when people feel that they have to comply to a different set of laws.
Well, and, you know, we should... I don't think anybody would be surprised because what have we been hearing for years, right? That we live in a democracy. I'm not sure which part of the republic skipped them, but they always refer to us as a democracy. And then we start talking about getting rid of the Electoral College that people don't understand anyway. And if we have no say, we are no longer a representative republic.
Yeah, that's right. Even the fact that we've been calling ourselves a democracy is not right, you know? I mean, I know that's a common term of art that's used to describe what people mean as a free people. But a democracy, a constitutional republic, is not a democracy.
Mm-mm.
You know,
no.
The founders rejected the idea of democracy, you know, because it was prone to demagoguery, and minority rights were not respected.
And just
democracy
a teeny bit of mob
has a bad
rule.
Habit of quickly devolving into tyrannies. And that's why we have a constitutional republic. It was try to correct the errors in the past, and the Athenian Greek city-state that was a pure democracy, and the errors that they also saw in the constitutional republic
with
the Roman Republic before it became an imperial tyranny.
Dr. Yep. Fry,
we have hit the
wall here, so we've got to say goodbye for this particular episode with you. We appreciate you coming on with us, and in honor of this next week's impeachment madness, we're going to play a little Twilight Zone here before we go. You're listening to We the People. Join us online.
Thanks, Dr. Pryde.
Radio.us.